You're listening to Freethinker Radio on 90.1 KPFT Houston, your home for uncensored news and underground music since 2011.
All right, I'm Mike. I'm glad to be here on Freethinker Radio on Friday, KPFT, 5 o'clock drive time, hanging out with my friend and co-host, Derek. How are you, Derek?
What's going on? What's up, man? Happy to be here again for another week, Freethinker Radio. Like you said, every week we do this on KPFT Houston and on the Conscious Resistance. We got, I think, most of our show today, Micah, based on the outlook of what we're going to focus on, seems to be around economics and inflation, which probably is, you know, probably pretty, a pretty good choice at the moment, because there's so many people, I'm sure, who are going to hear this, who are feeling the economic struggles of food prices, gas prices, and depending on where you're living, maybe even food shortages and gas shortages. And there's a lot of people asking questions about why is this happening. I noticed in the mainstream, we'll get into this more in a little bit, but I noticed in the mainstream, Michael, the conversation when they talk about inflation, they're happy to say it's the rich people's fault or things of that sort. But I rarely see that old institution, the Federal Reserve, being brought up. Or I don't know, how about the fact that they print trillions of dollars during an alleged, you know, pandemic of varying, you know, depending on your view, it was either worth doing lockdowns or it wasn't. But now we've come to find out, as we've been saying since the beginning, that the lockdowns cause harm, not only people's mental state, but to the economy. But I guess just what I'm getting at here is that in the conversation that I hear on the mainstream media, especially on other Houston airwaves, it's all about, oh, because of the Ukraine crisis, because of climate change, these things are happening. I don't think it's as easy just to point at those things. I do think, as the title of today's show is, that the inflation is by design. I think there's some element of that. We'll get into that more on today's show. But I got one event to plug. Do you got anything you want to plug locally, Micah, before we jump into it?
Not necessarily, but I do got a little local story once you get through with the event that I'd like to get into.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll jump into some Houston news. So I just wanted to mention, this was sent to me by a listener. And of course, we always appreciate when you guys send us music. If you want to, you know, want to share your music out there, we broadcast, as you know, on Houston, fourth largest city in the United States. And we broadcast through the Conscious Resistance Network. We're live on Odyssey. We're live on DLive and on Rockfin. And this goes on many different platforms after we air it. And so somebody sent in this event they wanted to recommend, and it happens to be in Colorado. It's not in Houston, but if you're in Colorado, Pueblo, Colorado, there is the Blowback Gallery, and they are having, from July 1st to the 29th, their first annual Blowback Gallery Truth Art Show for artists and attendees who value freedom and liberty and want to enjoy amazing works of art and performances that challenge the status quo and eviscerate the legacy media narrative. This is from their press release. You can find out more at blowbackgallery.com, and it says click on Truth Show for details. They're planning a Freedom Fest with art and performances all month long, and they're accepting art submissions if you want to be part of this. And I think that might apply whether you live in Pueblo, Colorado or not, through June 27th. So you still have a few days as of this recording. The Truth Show opens Friday, July 1st with a party going till 6 p.m. So that'll be next week. And again, the website is blowbackgallery.com. Apparently they got a 3-minute video. You can check it out and learn more about it. So I encourage you to look into that if you're in Colorado, and maybe even if you're not in the area, you can reach out to them and say you heard about it on Freethinker Radio and you might like to be involved.
No doubt. I think it's interesting you bring up being involved in the artist submissions, because there's a lot of things to be involved in Houston. We've always supported that. We like to support that. So in addition to music, that's something you can reach out with to us with. But we've also managed to play a wide variety of music, not just in terms of genre, but in terms of where the music comes from. A lot of local music from all over the world, from Australia, from other states, etc. But I think that's kind of interesting. It reminds me of how, you know, sometimes other bands and other artists would want to get on a local event, a local festival type thing. So, yeah, if you're traveling and looking to get into something, that might be something to watch for, or something to maybe imitate and make your own wherever you are. Yeah, this sounds pretty fun. But no doubt, I wanted to, just mention this story rather quickly. About the Galveston Island. You mentioned how we broadcast on the fourth largest city in the USA. And I'm really happy. One of our, you named a lot of places, platforms where we're getting the word out on and talking about the news and everything and playing the music. But I'm particularly proud of being on KPFT. I mean, we do reach all the way from Lake Livingston down to Galveston. We reach much more than Houston, out to Katy and beyond. So, you know, plug in, let us know what we can do. If you support our show, kpft.org, let them know that you appreciate us being broadcasting there with you know, a donation to help non-commercial radio station that can get the word out from a variety of shows to stay on the air. But yeah, let's get into this Galveston Island thing, because, you know, I think it's really important that people get out and enjoy their lives. I mean, what's freedom for if you're not able to enjoy it? So, you know, there's all kinds of ways of enjoying it. And I particularly like to go outside, and I also like to go to the beach. So Galveston, yes, you can listen to KPFT while you're down there exploring the island park. They got a new headquarters building, new restrooms, new roads, 95 new campsites, like camping, two new changing areas, rinse off showers. Those are always, you know, it's nice to be able to rinse off. 20 new shade shelters in a day use area, a season equestrian day use area. And they also have 5 miles of trails, newly remodeled nature center, right on the bayside, 2 observation towers, 2 boardwalks, 3 kayak launch locations on the bayside, a new vendor area, and 3 new group use pavilions on the beach side. So it sounds like, you know, they've kind of ramped it up and got it nice for you. So if you're looking to get down to the beach, might be something you check out. But I know we got a lot more to get into, and we should move on. What's our next? Where do we go?
Let's see. We got a number of stories. I know if you want to just jump right into the second one we had here on our list, I think is worth mentioning, worth starting on to before we get into the economic stuff, which is the story of Julian Assange. Julian Assange, you know, his extradition has now been approved to be brought to the United States, where he will more than likely be facing charges of treason and life in prison, or even potentially the death penalty if they go, you know, feel as bold as trying to bring that out. But this article you pulled up is from Counterpunch. You want to talk about it?
Yeah, I do. And I think we should just, there have been a number of shows where we had to, at the end, say, oh yeah, this is going on with Assange. And I don't think we've been able to give him time in a while. And I heard on Democracy Now! Just this morning, they were speaking to it, and, you know, basically an assumption behind there was that he would be killed if he came here. And I'm not sure if that's the case, and I hope that's not the case. But that was a big part of the narrative I heard there. But moving on to the Counterpunch article, another thing that people are mentioning is its similarity to getting the word out during Vietnam. But it turns out, with the recent decision of British Home Secretary to approved the extradition of Assange to the United States, it's now virtual certainty that Assange will soon be brought to the U.S. for a trial. I think, you know, this trial will matter a lot, and it should matter a lot to KPFT listeners and people there, because we're talking about the ability to communicate, and we're talking about journalism. We're talking about, and for this show, we're definitely talking about freedom of communication, and we're talking about the military-industrial complex. All of these things should be, you know, this should be important news for us here in America, at least. Let's hope that he uses the opportunity to put the Pentagon and the CIA on trial. Whoa, what? Yeah. I know that whichever federal judge is appointed to preside over the trial will do his best not to permit that to happen. But what's wrong with a little civil disobedience in what will inevitably be a rigged kangaroo court whose outcome of guilt will be preordained? Let's not forget, after all, that Assange isn't a criminal here. He's the guy who disclosed the criminal conduct to the world through his organization, WikiLeaks. That criminal conduct was committed by the Pentagon and the CIA, supported by their enablers in the executive and legislative branches of the federal government. In a just society, people who disclose criminal conduct would be hailed as heroes, and the people who engage in criminal conduct would be, you know, suffering some sort of repercussions, right? But in the clown world of a national security state, it's the opposite. Criminals are the accusers, and jailers are the opponents of their criminal conduct, are the ones who are punished, tortured, and sent to jail. One of the big things that Assange's attorneys could do during the trial is to restate and reemphasize every dark side action in which U.S. personnel engaged that WikiLeaks disclosed. Plus, ones that WikiLeaks did not disclose. While that wouldn't necessarily change the outcome of the Kangaroo proceeding, it would at least show the world why they are going after Assange. When the U.S. government was converted from its founding structure of a limited government republic to a national security state to fight the Cold War against the godless communism and the Soviet Union as part of the extreme anti-Russia animus of that era, there was an implicit bargain struck between the national security establishment and the American people. The Pentagon, the CIA, and the NSA would be empowered to engage in totalitarian-like dark side powers, but they would keep their unsavory actions secret from the American people so the people's conscience wouldn't be bothered. Assange interfered with that practice by disclosing to the world some of those dark side practices. For that matter, so did Edward Snowden. For that, they both need to be punished. If for no other reason than to send a message to everyone else, this is what will happen to you if you reveal our dark side criminal practices to the world. What is it? Snitches get stitches. Be prepared for a judicial spectacle when Assange, who is an Australian citizen, is forcibly brought to the United States for trial for disclosing the criminal conduct of the U.S. government. Just don't expect anything remotely resembling justice in the process. I kind of wanted to read this article because of, you know, the way it was able to talk about the theatrics of court a bit. And in a case of this magnitude, I think that's a relevant aspect of it. I think it's part of the conversation. I think the side conversation on this, we need to, you know, step up the side conversation. If we don't, it'll just, you know, it'll be a lot easier to, you know, just kick in the narrative. And so that's a little bit of a different approach that Counterpunch had. It didn't really bring up the history of revealing dark side forces in the past and how that's been, you know, supported afterwards by the government rather than, you know, prosecuted. So I thought, you know, it's interesting because this isn't the first time such a thing has occurred. And I think that conversation, as this conversation moves forward on other episodes of this, we'll get further and further into speaking about those historic events and why people were able to reveal, you know, actions in Vietnam, actions that led to Vietnam, without having to suffer these sort of penalties.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, this, like you said, the reason this matters so much is because, there's a lot of reasons. The main reason is that a human being's life is kind of on the line here and has been for almost 10 years. You know, we have to remember that before he was even being held for this attempted extradition, he was already essentially a prisoner in the Ecuadorian embassy in London for years, you know, before they got him out of there and then took him to Belmarsh prison where they held him in solitary and he faced all kinds of, you know, horrible treatment. And even just since this extradition announcement has been made in the last couple of days, his wife, his brother, and his father have given some interviews to independent media, and his father has said that he's been put on suicide watch in the recent days because I may be feeling quite hopeless, you know, perhaps like facing the brunt of the U.S. empire and knowing that he's going to have to come here. And as the article said, knowing that there's sort of a preordained conclusion and that there's not going to be much in the way of justice for him might not be the most encouraging situation that's going to want somebody to put, you know, continue living. So I don't know if any of us could fault him if he would attempt to take his life. Hopefully that doesn't take place. But yeah, he has been placed on suicide watch. And again, the last thing I'll say is that no matter what your opinion is, I really hope by now we're 2022, we're 6 years after the 2016 election, that most people have come to the awareness that Julian Assange and WikiLeaks were not working for the Russians and that they were not part of some plot to get Trump elected. There's no evidence of that. And that also there, you know, these files did reveal corruption about Hillary Clinton and straight up telling corporations and banks, you know, that she says one thing publicly and she says another thing privately, not to mention all kinds of other things about other Democratic officials and things that we won't get into on this show today. But lots was revealed through that. It wasn't totally just some Russian hit job, you know, fake news, etc. But I remember at the time, that's when you witnessed this shift of WikiLeaks being this bastion of truth and standing up for liberty. And people were very supportive, or some people were supportive of them in 2010, 2011, in the Obama years when they were revealing certain things and revealing things about banks and war. And then all of a sudden there was this shift, especially from the left wing, from the progressive, of like, they were no longer, you know, valid. They were now Russian disinfo because this belief that they got Trump elected, right? And then, of course, Trump, you know, I love the WikiLeaks because he was using them to criticize Hillary, rightfully so. And then in his time in office, took no steps to protect Julian Assange or even speak about it publicly and said, oh, I really don't know anything about that, you know, whenever asked about it. So we're dealing with a lot here. There's a lot on the line, and least of all of which is journalistic freedom and press and publishing. And
I think it's also interesting to point out that the information, it's not as if Julian Assange went and broke in somewhere and gathered this information. He was given it by one of their employees, more or less, who has since been pardoned. I mean, most of it. I know he divulged a lot of information, but you know, that seems strange to me that one of the main sources has been pardoned. Not that they don't deserve to be pardoned, but they're still pursuing this guy. I mean, Bradley Manning was pardoned, Chelsea Manning was pardoned under Obama, during Obama's time. Obama pardoned her right before he left. So I don't know. I think that's an interesting aspect. And I know that there's a lot more going on besides just the information that he gathered from Manning. But at the same time, I think we'll be following it. And we hope you are too. And I think that's the main point I want to get into, is that I hope people do follow this. And I hope people do take this conversation, you know, to family members and to the office and such, because there's so many things at stake. There's so much about freedom. And like last episode, we talked about, you know, being more aggressive with it rather than, you know, saying, oh, well, you know, this is going to happen. But being more aggressive with not accepting the, you know, like we're talking about the kangaroo court, not accepting the preordained thing that you have to give up anything, that giving up security or giving up a free press or giving up any of this is just the way it has to be. And I think that coupled with some action can go a long way, at least in the dialogue, if nothing else. It's really interesting to get all these comments coming in, you know, so many people seem to be interested in this issue. So that's great to see as well. So, you know, moving on, one of the things we're talking about here is the military-industrial complex. And it's going to be another one of our stories that we're going to get into in a moment about the draft. And then we will get to what we promised, the inflation. You know, don't worry, we will get there. So let me see if I can play a song until we can get Derek back on. And if not, I'll just go on into the other one. But we've got all kinds of music. We're looking to get your music. You can even send us music you like. We'll be right back. Wow. Ganesha. They are in the studio finishing up the new album. We got a single out by them called Imaginary Person. We played it here a couple of times. It sounds great. I hope you all enjoyed that. They really get a room moving about. Derek will be back with us in a moment. But a couple of things I want to go ahead and mention while we were just wrapping up on Julian Assange, a comment that came in. An individual from Rockfin said, I am guessing that most ordinary people do not even know Julian Assange's name. I mean, they know his name, but they refuse to remember his name. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Derek will be with us again just momentarily. But it turns out that last year, the U.S. Congress considered a very bad and ill-considered idea with no debate and no real scrutiny. There was this effort to add to the annual National Defense Authorization Act. We talk about this act and how much stuff they always try to put in it, you know, how much extra stuff they squeeze in there, like indefinite detention, things like that. In this one, what are they trying to squeeze in? A provision to require women to register for military conscription. You could say in some ways, oh boy, equality, you know, anybody can get drafted. I mean, I don't know. I don't think anybody should be drafted. Okay. And I would imagine that a lot of people wouldn't think that. So, you know, this is not a good thing. This is the expansion of a bad thing. At least that's my view. It turns out that the provision was dropped and that proponents are planning to quietly try to add it again this year. And I thought y'all might just want to know about that because, you know, the military industrial complex, it never sleeps. Oh, Derek's back. I can add him. All right. Welcome back, Derek. I think you'd be here.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay, cool.
So what do you think? They tried to squeeze it into the NDAA, one of your favorite bills, drafting conscription of females, of women. Say what a woman was, right? But they're going to draft them.
Yeah, I think that one's pretty crazy. I mean, it's not surprising, but I do think that, like you were saying, that the bigger picture for me is sort of that they shouldn't be allowed to, we shouldn't be accepting really any drafting of anybody. I mean, and conscription or even the fact that men have to sign up, but people have to register at a certain age, I think totally outdated and just not consistent with where we're at, or at least where we should be as a country and as a world, generally speaking.
Well, speak it into existence. We were just talking about the music that we were getting from Australia, and we've got an individual who's tuned in from Australia. We want to go ahead and thank them as well. But yeah, I agree with you completely about that. I think most people, you know, it seems like most civil people should recognize this, but I think it goes back to the, you know, they recognize certain things, but then it comes time for something they want and they forget about it and they decide it's good to force people to. And it sounds, you know, this is just an extension of that old ideology, you know, that horrible old ideology that you just force people to do things that you think are good, you know. You just put the word good on it or whatever and make them do it. So, yeah. Y'all watch out for that. Watch out. They want to draft your daughters. I don't know about that. They want to draft your girlfriends. I don't think they want to draft your grandmas yet, but y'all might want to watch out. So, yeah, you know, we're saying we're going to talk about the economics, and, you know, we might as well just go ahead and get into this. I could play another music, another song, but, you know, this first story, it has to do with the economics, but in a different way than the inflation we're going to talk about. It turns out that the U.S. Mint officials have decided to cancel 2022 Morgan & Peace dollar production. Y'all might not have realized this, but they were going to make the old school silver dollars. They have been making silver eagles, an ounce of silver, a bullion coin for a while, but they were going to make these ones that were well-loved. And they make silver dollars all the time, usually commemorative of all kinds of things. But nonetheless, they were going to make these historic coins only dated 2022. But it turns out that production plans for the dollars were scrapped because the mint is unable to secure sufficient quantities of 999 fine silver. So, you know, that's kind of interesting. You know, it had a lot of appeal behind the product. So, I mean, a lot of magazines have been covering it, a lot of people have been talking about it. But the mint intends to resume production and sales of the Morgan & Peace dollars in 2023. The pause is directly related to global lockdowns' impact upon the availability of silver blanks from the mint suppliers. Tom Power, who's the president and owner of Sunshine Minting Inc., said that there is no shortage of silver in the market to be eventually fabricated into blanks for the U.S. Mint and other government mints. The refineries are shipped the necessary raw silver metal to then be fabricated into the blanks, which, of course, then the finished silver products are made out of. Power says that supply chain issues, production capacity, and shipping logistics are the contributory factors affecting blanking problems. The rising spot price of metals is also affecting the supply chain, with shipments having to be insured at much higher values. Power says, noting there is also limitations on shipping quantities. So basically, they can only ship so much, so they can't just pile it all up. Power says that the U.S. Mint has some limitations on its capability to produce certain quantities of specific products because of press capacity and manpower, which has been an issue since March 12, 2020, when restrictions pushed many logistical processes off kilter. So this is just one that, you know, maybe people didn't think much about, you know, but they were going to sell millions of these coins, you know, and now that won't, those sales won't happen until next year. And they're already saying they have to be very conservative and figure out which of their products to put the limited supply of silver into. So, you know, it's another year where mint coins that are silver are going to be scarce. And the silver, this guy here, Tom Power, who we talked about from Sunshine Minting, says it's not for lack of silver. So I think we're starting to see the same pattern over and over again. So can you hear me, Derek? All right. I guess not. Well, we got about half an hour left, I think.
No, I can hear you.
Oh, okay, cool. All right. Well, you know, that was the last story that I think we have that isn't inflation-based. So I don't know if you want to get into something else before.
Well, why don't we, if you can, Micah, if you can, if you're on the production side, if you see there's a video that I just uploaded, it's a trailer I wanted to play. It's like a minute and a half long, 2 minutes at most, for
an hour.
Yeah. I've mentioned that recently that I have this 17 part documentary series. I'm a good ways through. We just released our 10th episode and it's on the foundations and specifically the nonprofit industrial complex and also what are known as the roundtable group. So it kind of starts maybe a little bit more mainstream and a place people can get behind in terms of talking about how nonprofits and the nonprofit sector can often dilute activists' strength and have them just chasing after grants and doing things like that instead of going out there and really trying to take some action oriented. They end up working for that system. So there's those concerns. And then the concerns of like, how do these corporations, these type of individuals affect our world and whether or not that's legitimate and how do they, the people who start them, like these foundations, how do they hide their taxes? And there's those kinds of concerns. And then it gets deeper in looking into claims that these foundations actually have an ulterior motive. And then even deeper talking about the roundtable groups and its connection to Cecil Rhodes. So this clip that we're going to play is just like a 2 minute summary of a 35 minute episode that you can find at thepyramidofpower.net. And it is features the voices of G. Edward Griffin, who is a researcher, journalist, author who exposed the Federal Reserve System, as well as one of the first journalists to report on this back in the 60s when it was one of the reports that I document was taking place, as well as Richard Grove from Tragedy and Hope. And then it also features the voice of Norman Dodd, who is this older gentleman who is now since deceased, who was involved in this congressional committee back in the 50s investigating these foundations. So this clip features all that in 2 minutes. So check that out.
Chapter 10, The Foundations and the Nonprofit Industrial Complex.
I came across this one document on the topic of tax-exempt foundations and their association with the Soviet Union shortly after World War II. And when I say association with the Soviet Union, I shouldn't say that. Their association with the Soviet ideology.
So why don't you tell the people of the country? That's what you told me. And his answer was, we would not think of doing any such thing. So then I said, well, Mr. Gaither, obviously, you forced the Congress to spend this money in order to find out what you've just told me.
so that Rhodes's idea had funding, it had an academic aspect, it had a secret society aspect, and it was to be modeled on the Jesuits and replace Roman Empire with Catholic Church, or with the British Empire. Roman Catholic religion with British Empire is one of the quotes. So now it's not just Tragedy and Hope telling you about Rhodes. You got his last will and testament, and you can go out on your own and verify.
More than 70 years has passed since the warnings from Norman Dodd, Carol Reese, and the Walsh Commission, and more than 50 years since Carol Quigley exposed the Roundtable groups. Needless to say, the warnings were not heeded, and the power of the foundations and the Roundtable groups has only grown and become more influential on the public. However, in that time, the public has become even more ignorant to the ways in which these organizations influence and shape our world. The Gates Foundation is now one of the largest and most influential foundations, and the Rockefellers continue to hold massive sway. What will it take to break the hold that these corrupt institutions have on the minds of the masses?
All right, that's a interesting. I want to find out more about the what is it, the nonprofit industrial complex?
People can find that over at thepyramidofpower.net. Thepyramidofpower.net. You can see all 10 episodes that we've released so far, and we're going to be releasing the next two for this season later this in July. So check it out.
Nice, nice. So I know you've got some articles to get into, and
I've got a couple that are sort of in our theme here. I mean, we've covered a lot. I'm glad we did make time, like you said, Micah, for talking about Julian Assange, because I think that's just of utmost importance. But I want to say that I think it is also important for us to talk about, and you touched on some of these different elements of, like, say, the banking and things of these sorts. But I think it is important to recognize that we have been saying for a little while that there were going to be lockdowns in the form of, you know, different kinds of lockdowns, I guess you could say, not just lockdowns on for COVID-19, but lockdowns and what you could call, I guess, austerity measures. I don't know if that's a fair word, Micah, but somewhat I think it would qualify, austerity measures related to climate change, related to things of that sort. So now I got two stories that are sort of in that vein. 8 million Australians are urged to turn off the lights. This is being reported from the BBC. Australia's energy minister has urged households in New South Wales, a state that includes the country's biggest city, Sydney, to switch off their lights in the face of an energy crisis. Chris Bowen says people should not use electricity for 2 hours every evening if they, quote, have a choice. However, he added he was confident that blackouts could be avoided, and it comes after Australia's main wholesale electricity market was suspended because of surge in prices. Mr. Bowen asked people living in New South Wales to conserve as much power as possible. Quote, if you had a choice about when to run certain times, don't run from them from 6 to 8 in the evening, he said during a televised media conference in Canberra. And as far as the BBC is concerned, which I'm not saying is any sort of bastion of truth, hardly, but this is what they're telling people, at least in that mainstream outlet. The reason for the crisis is, they say, Australia, one of the world's biggest exporters of coal and liquefied natural gas, has been struggling with a power crisis since last month. 3/4 of the country's electricity is still generated using coal. It has long been accused of not doing enough to cut its emissions by investing in renewables. I think it's interesting they bring in the climate change thing. It's like, oh, this darn Australia is still dependent on coal. They're not doing enough to go into the new renewables. Now they're going to suffer with high prices and emergent and an energy crisis. In recent weeks, Australia has felt the impact of disruption to coal supplies, outages at several coal-fired power plants, and soaring global energy crisis. Flooding earlier this year hit some coal mines in New South Wales and Queensland, while technical issues have cut production at two mines that supplied the market's biggest coal-fired station. So they go on and just talking about, of course, they want to say, some electricity producers have seen their costs soar as global coal and gas prices have jumped due to sanctions on Russia over its invasion of Ukraine. And yeah, they're also saying that demand for energy has jumped since Australia's economy has opened up after COVID restrictions have eased. So overall, they're putting the blame on there. That's one of them. And let me share one more, Micah, before we get your thoughts on this. This one says, and this is an exclusive for the Irish Independent, published about 2 weeks ago, return of work from home plan to save fuel in event of crisis caused by Ukraine war. Again, that sort of blaming the Ukraine war for everything. A high-level planning exercise proposed three fuel supply deficit scenarios. Now, what is this about? People will be ordered to work from home in the event of a major fuel crisis sparked by the war in Ukraine under secret government emergency plans. The Irish Independent has learned confidential details of an emergency planning exercise held 10 days ago between all major state agencies and the government. Leaked government files reveal planning for winter fuel shortages. They have a video that goes along with it. They kind of, you know, they make it all dramatic and sound pretty creepy. But the truth is, the government held a high-level planning exercise proposing three fuel supply scenarios, and possible consequences were presented and discussed. Delegates were given a scenario of a 20 PC diesel supply deficit in September and a 35 PC drop in supply in December. September and December. The third and most extreme scenario proposed for February 2023 is where gas and oil supplies cannot meet the demand for electricity generation or farmers preparing to cut silage. The Irish Independent can reveal that in the event of a national fuel crisis, emergency contingency measures discussed at the high-level meeting include all non-essential workers will be ordered to work from home. A limit will be placed on all non-essential car travel. A strict limit on the amount of fuel motorists can buy at one time. The implementation of an immediate and strict reduction in the speed limit on motorways. The plan also includes the introduction of an emergency scheme whereby motorists with an odd number at the end of their car registration will only be allowed to drive or refuel on alternate days. And it goes on from here. I mean, this whole thing goes on. This was officially called the confidential meeting convened by the Department of the Environment, Climate, and Communications on May 26th at the National Emergency Coordination Center. It was termed the, quote, oil emergency exercise. But what do you think about this, Micah? This oil emergency exercise, government making plans for similar things. This sounds like COVID. Non-essential workers stay home, non-essential travel, in this case, limits on gas purchases. Only people with odd numbers on their license plate allowed to drive on certain days. And then the other one talking about Australians being encouraged to cut off electricity usage for 2 hours a day. What do you think about this?
Oh, my goodness. It reminds me of a long, long time ago when they did gas rationing here and we had to go to the fuel station, the gas station, the petrol station, based on the last number of our license plate, odd and even type thing, while they were gas rationing. And I don't know, it's the things we've talked about for years in a way, when you think about it, with the inflation and when Occupy started, the banker bailout, and we just see it, you know, the inflation getting bigger and bigger. When you see this, what was one of the things that was constantly spoke about? The need to eventually there'll be the need to ration things because it outstrips the productive quality. It outstrips the productive quality so much. I know we're in there's a lot of other aspects to play here, but I do think it's interesting because remember they'd show like the store shelves would be empty and yet they'd have to give the state workers raises, which would often just be the police and the military, so that they'd stay around protecting stuff when there was nothing there. So I don't know, you know, it's, I don't think there's something against rationing. I think we should all have responsible energy consumption as best we can. I know, you know, when you think about the food side of this stuff, what we can produce will matter. I don't know. That's a lot to have a really cogent and probing answer to what you think about it in a sense, because it's a big story with a lot going on in it, and it's in an entire different nation too. So I don't know. You know, I understand the arguments that they're giving for trying to do this, but at the same time, it's just more and more control. I don't know where you go with it. You know, there's a point at which each state's got to take some responsibility. I don't know how. I don't live in Australia. I mean, I hate to be that flip in a way. I don't live in Australia. I know I don't want them to be tortured. I know we've brought up a lot of things about Australia, like the people having to escape from the camp thing there, you know, during the COVID. And I think we should talk about those sort of things. But you know, on this story, I'm not exactly sure. It's such a big hydra with so many different heads, you know. Reduce your power usage, reduce your gas consumption, reduce. We talked about, productivity. So what, you work and then you don't have power at home, or, you know, lots of Australia is really hot also. So I'm not sure. What do you think about it? I mean, I recognize, like you brought up the, some of the UN mandates and stuff like that in there as well. But what do you think is the big takeaway here that's between the lines?
Well, I think that what we're witnessing between, so we just kind of were focusing on energy, gas and power and electricity and those sorts of things. I think also, and the other part we were talking about today is inflation. I know you touched on a little bit. We got a couple more stories maybe we'll get into before we wrap up. To me, this is all sort of tied up in the same issue, right? Because people are being told right now, the reason there is inflation, there's articles out there from certain media saying, oh, it's the rich people. They're somehow causing that, there's this absence of discussion around the Federal Reserve when it's clear that the Fed is, and the printing of trillions and trillions of dollars, that these are, this is clearly not a recipe for a good economy. And those sorts of things are becoming more and more obvious, or at least somebody is finally letting the house of cards crumble and become, that it's the truth about how fragile it is become known to the public. And that is being blamed, though, on everything from climate change to Ukraine to COVID-19. But I think that really, the reason I chose that inflation is by design, and one of our commentators, I saw someone comments about, about Agenda 21, what other people refer to as Agenda 2030. I think that is really kind of a big part of what we're talking about here. For those who are not familiar with, I mean, it's just the United Nations program to supposedly fight climate change. But I just think it's interesting that a lot of the things we're experiencing now, they really feed into the overall, I think, desire for many on the left wing and the Democratic Party and elsewhere who believe in the Green New Deal to try to reduce driving, to reduce vehicles on the road. And they're getting their wish one way or another. Now, whether there's some conspiracy directly to make that happen, I'll leave that up to you. But I do think it's clear that there are some people seem to be benefiting from this. And that's kind of my main takeaway. I think that the inflation and the energy stuff working together is all by design and is definitely not going to signal anything good for the people.
I think it's not something to be overlooked that we're talking about reducing the people's power, literally. It's a pun, but it's also really what we're talking about. So, I mean, that's kind of why I talked about productivity. Think about it as a writer, I guess you could bust out the pencil and pen and write that way and put it in your computer the next day, or you could just have your battery charged up. And, people are going to find alternate ways to deal with this. But I don't know. I do think, part of the problem with, these from on high solutions, is just the assumption that everybody, and everything is, needs to get in line with the plan, with the totalitarian aspect of them. I'm not saying, like reducing the carbon footprint is necessarily totalitarian, but sometimes people, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. They'll take totalitarian actions for this cause. And the other side of it is, of course, the whole question about a giant collective of people forming based on the fear of the end of the world. But that's maybe just beyond just what we're talking about here. Although I think it's obviously evident.
Yeah, lots to consider. We got a little bit more time. I know you had another one you wanted to get into, Micah, on Canada inflation, but maybe we can hit another song if you see any in our archive you want to throw out. Maybe we could take a quick music break.
Let's take a quick music break because we do love bringing music and we do love discovering music. So, you know, reach out to us and send us something. I will find us something. Maybe we should just get into a little bit of our friend who's not with us today.
Everyone should be like me. Go.
Marijuana smoking, experts point out, can make a helpless addict of its victim within weeks, causing physical and moral ruin and death. Should you ever be confronted with the temptation of taking that first puff of a marijuana cigarette, don't do it.
Stupid idiot in there with fascist punk, you know, want everybody to be like me, and then got a little bit of the fails in there with a customized version, what they called a Mr. Clean version of Mr. Green. So, yeah, I thought we'd squeeze in what we could, but I know we're moving forward. We got to talk about inflation, and I, you know, we always talk about the Fed. I mean, it's, you know, a perennial topic here on Freethinker Radio, but it turns out, you know, we talk about other banks too, but now's a good time too. The Bank of Canada has come under a rare attack from critics after misjudging inflation and locking itself into a rigid forward guidance that prevented it from reacting swiftly as prices surged and Canada's economy began to overheat. One of the world's leading central banks is now being forced to play catch-up, hiking interest rates more aggressively than originally expected, just as Canadian household debt levels hit new highs, surging far above other G7 nations. With a possible recession looming, the bank is facing questions from politicians, economists, and even the public. Oh my goodness, the public? About the opacity of its decision-making process and renewed calls for its to release minutes, a common practice among many of its peers. For its part, the Bank of Canada has admitted missteps and is promising more transparency. How many times have we heard more transparency from these central banks, you know? But yeah, so the Board of Canada, which they claim is independent in setting policy, has not faced this level of political heat since the early 90s when the opposition leader railed against Governor John Crow over his high interest rate policy. The Bank of Canada, like many other central banks, held that inflation was temporary or transitory. Yeah, it's transitory, all right. It's going to transit us right to some new prices, and did not start raising rates until March of 2022 when inflation was already more than double their 2% target. So, you know, who knows how much it was really more than double 2%. That's a wide range, right? Plus, you know, who knows how they measure it. Prices are now rising at levels not seen since 83, hitting 7.7% in May and above target for 15 months, with the price of everyday essentials surging and the risk of inflation becoming entrenched is growing. So, yeah, that's some of what they're talking about in Canada. And I know we've got some others to get into. I want to point out the fact that a lot of this story in particular has a lot more going on, and all these stories you can find at Freethinker Radio, HoustonFreethinkers.com.
Absolutely. Can you hear me okay, Michael? Oh, excuse me. A little echo there. All right. Well, we're down here to the last few minutes. I mean, I think that we've covered so much today. And I really think for the last few minutes, maybe we can just focus here on the comments, the listener comments, and everybody who's listening on KPFT. Of course, we always value your thoughts. And if you want to leave comments on our Facebook page at Freethinker Radio, also those who are on Rockfin, on DLive, those who are on Odyssey.
I'd like to speak to a comment.
It says, sure.
Play some Anti-Flag. That's a good band.
I'm down for that. Although their politics in recent years have kind of gone, I think they've literally have campaigned for political presidents, Democratic presidents the last couple of times. But I used to love Anti-Flag. But what I was going to get at is I'd love to hear just in the last few minutes, any comments of how this inflation is directly affecting you. I mean, I've been noticing this for over the last year, but we talked about this like in the month of May. I think it really started to become apparent like everywhere. So, right, Houston setting records for all-time highs on gas. In fact, I've been living in Mexico for the last 2 years, and one of the few things in Mexico that is actually more expensive typically is gas. It's like food and everything else can be pretty affordable out here, especially if you have the US dollar. And, you know, that's always been sort of known about Mexico. But the one thing is like traveling around, you got toll roads, but you also got really expensive gas. Well, since I've come back, gas is actually cheaper here in Mexico now than it is in the US. Not by much. And it kind of varies day to day. But let's say like on average, when you go from the liter, because you're paying for per liter and then liter to the gallon, you end up paying four something a gallon out here, right? And it's been that way for a while. But now where it's like $4.50 and up in some places, even in Houston, and $5, $6, $7, you know, it's $4.50 down here. Now, that's not to say that that's even reflective of real prices, right? Because I do know that the Mexican government subsidizes oil and gas in the country too as well. So I'm not even, you know, I'm sure it could be even way higher at the actual really valued price. But the point here is that these changes are taking place. It's affecting us in many different ways. And I'd like to hear from our listeners. So feel free. And I got a lot of comments over here on Odyssey. I'm going to hit a couple of them real quick. Dude Bro says inflation is the only method of control they have. And somebody said Agenda 21 and Event 201 can be also be references to the 21st century. And somebody says, I do enjoy some Irish street punk. So that's cool. And yeah, you know, people are over here listening. And I think that this is what we need to recognize. There's going to be some real impacts on our lives. So whether you're watching on Odyssey, DLive, or Rockfin, let us know what you're thinking, or on Facebook. See, we got one comment here. You want to read that one, Micah?
Definitely. One of our Australian listeners tells us, and this is in Australian dollars, lettuce is $10 in Australia right now at the moment, and mortgage, gas rise in the last 2 months. Fuel similar rises in some place, $3 Australian a liter. One thing I'll mention is also I saw an article about the home price rises here in Houston, and I'm sure it's elsewhere, but that's another thing we're seeing right here. You know, you ask what's happening here, that's another thing. So I hope people are, you know, at least thinking about what this means to them, you know, and maybe considering if they have assets, they probably want to protect them. And if they have room to garden, it might not be a bad idea in general. But yeah, I'd like to hear how people are, you know, dealing with their assets, because a lot of assets are falling. I mean, that's another way of talking about inflation, right? It's like asset prices, you know, not only, you know, the stock market's gone whack, the digital currencies are all been down, silver was down. But, you know, sometimes what I think you need to consider is how far down are these things in comparison with, I don't know, say the S&P 500, you know, you could be down 1%, but that isn't much compared to, you know, a dozen percent and 7%.
I think we're about out of time, Michael. Before we play a closing song, I do want to mention this, at least in closing, because we've been talking about Fed and the inflation, and we don't have time to play the clip. It's just a short little clip, but I can just read the quote. Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell, he gave a speech in the last week or so, and he said the following, quote, "Rapid changes are taking place in the global monetary system that may affect the international role of the dollar in the future. A U.S. central bank digital currency could also potentially help maintain the dollar's international standing." And somebody, the kind of onlooker, the commentator said, translation, they know that raising interest rates won't stop inflation. They also know that the debt crisis that it sets off will force the world to move away from the dollar. Introducing a CBDC won't stop this, but they hope it will allow them to keep the population under control. This is the driving force behind the Great Reset. So something to think about. But that's about all we got for today. You know, grow food if you can. Stock up on food if you can. Put away some seeds.
The one thing
important time, you know.
Yeah, this Great Reset, I don't know that they haven't reset before, you know what I mean? And this is just another coming of the same old loot and hurt the people, you know? So I don't know how much is going to happen. Y'all be great. Y'all be great. Enjoy the week.
All right, guys, out of here. Check this one out. This is called The System by Beast 1333. Peace.
She's cops.